There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
The Abu Dhabi Islamic Bank released its Money Smart Index that looked at financial habits of 1,300 residents earning over 10,000 dirhams a month. Now, it has found that more than half of respondents save on most months, considerably more than the 24% who reported this back in 2014. Meanwhile, 56% said they were very cautious about their finances, and only 6% claim they pay no attention to their spending. But is it easy enough to save? 57% of residents say that they have money left over after covering their monthly expenses. 40% say they have a little left, and only 3% spend more than they earn. So is the UAE too expensive, or are lifestyle expectations simply too high? Are expats spending here more than they would in their home countries? Many have been feeling the pinch of rising costs of living in recent times. According to the Statistics Centre, Abu Dhabi consumer prices in the capital rose 2.7% in the first quarter of 2018 from the previous year, with inflation reported at 3.9%. So has this affected how you manage your personal finances? Do you make a budget or spend without much thought? And do you know where to put your money, or do you find investing too daunting a prospect? A little later on in the show, we're going to be talking to Steve Cronin, the founder of Dead Simple Saving, to understand why people don't invest and why and what they can do about it. But in the meantime, we'd like your thoughts and opinions, please. We know that money is tight at the moment. We know times are tough. We know that cost of living has gone up, and therefore that would presume, people would keep a closer eye on their finances as a result of that. Question is, do you still find it easy to save in the UAE, despite the fact that cost of living is going up and you have to be more careful with your finances? And do you actively manage your personal finances? Are you a stickler for this one, George Dolly?
My husband and I, like loads of families in Dubai, are treating our time here as an opportunity to save as much money as we can and sort of bank it, ready for going back to, potentially going back to a country where you have to pay tax. So our view is any money that used to go on tax should now be saved. But then you're faced with a situation that you don't really know where to put it. And I find it incredibly daunting. And it's really interesting that this topic's come up, because oddly enough, my husband and I spent the last week, nearly every single evening, we were arguing about money effectively. And for the right reasons, because we've got a little bit saved and we just don't know where to put it. And everywhere you look, there's fees, and everyone's telling you about dodgy, you know, financial advisors out here and how you have to be really careful. And it's really stressful. I mean, and it's not a huge lump sum, and it'll probably disappear when we have to pay the school fees. But in the meantime, you don't want to just leaving it in your bank account. You feel like you ought to be responsible and trying to make money out of it. But it's really tricky.
Do we take money for granted here? Is there that element of the fact that the country is transient in many ways in terms of the population that we're here? Take advantage of that time without a view for the future. Let's get some personal perspectives on this one. We're going to go to line three. Let's speak to Nikki, who joins us from Jumeirah. Morning, Nikki.
Morning.
Thanks very much indeed for your thoughts and time this morning. So let's give you the floor for the moment. I mean, is there that element, do you think, in terms of we don't really take our finances as seriously here as we might elsewhere?
I don't know if that's particularly a Dubai problem. I do feel like it is definitely a global issue. You could speak to people in any country. I'm lucky that I've got to travel a lot. And yeah, the general financial IQ level of every country is actually very low. And it's, you know, in that scenario she was just saying about arguing with her husband, it's not taught in our schools, in any school system, the importance of managing money. And the real sad truth about it is it's actually quite simple.
For you personally, I mean, has finance always been something that's interest you? Has it always been something that's been important to you?
Certainly not. It's only in the last couple of years when I started raising capital for my business and managing the finances of the business so closely. We operate our businesses very efficiently and our lives very inefficiently. You know, if you were to realize 40% of your spending in your business is going on something that's not generating returns, you would change that. but in our personal lives, we don't even look that deeply at where we spend our money, generally speaking.
Is it easy to spend? I mean, you mentioned there that you've got a sort of global perspective here. Is there this element of, certainly from an expat point of view, that's easier to spend here?
You know, the one thing about Dubai is just there is just so many fun things to do around every corner. There's no doubt about that. There's more events per capita. There's more activities and fun things you can do. But at the same time, in Dubai, you can live very frugally. You can, like, if you were to just, you know, take a moment and assess your finances and create goals like you would in your business, you can build towards them. You can live an excellent life here without spending much money.
How did you decide how much of your monthly income you were going to save?
You know, when I started sort of learning about personal finance in the last couple of years and reading a couple of books, I realized that the more you can save and the earlier you can save it and put it to work, the quicker you're going to shave lives off your years off your working life. If I started this, say, 10, 15 years ago, when I was early 20s, I would be financially far more secure than I am today. And I want to make sure in the next 10 years I do the same thing when I'm in my 40s. It's just the earlier you start, and honestly, it really doesn't matter. Like, you don't have to have millions to start. You can start with 100 dirhams a month or 500 dirhams a month or whatever you can put away. It's just important to start that sort of micro-discipline of saving for your future and then putting it to work.
And am I right in believing, Nikki, that it's so important to you that you've even sort of gone as far as preparing a guide, not just for yourself, but also for your friends?
I did. So once I sort of understood the fundamentals of it, I was, you know, the biggest thing that took me back about it was the fact that it's actually so simple once you understand the fundamentals of saving and investing. So I did put together a small document for my family and my close friends, and then just put it online so people can read it, because it's, since I did that in January, I've managed to help a number of people understand the fundamentals of finance and start getting them working towards their own financial freedom.
And just finally, is that something that you would advise to people now in this day and age, that we live in a digital age, there is information available to us online and elsewhere? Is that the best place to start if people do have doubts?
Are you asking about the guide? Is that the best place to start?
Your guide, but others. I mean, it's interesting to see there is so much information and advice out there at the moment. I suppose that's one of the concerns for people when it comes to finances, is they don't really know who to believe. But is your advice, having been through the process, to ask those questions?
I would definitely. I think one of the biggest sort of root causes of this sort of giant problem that people don't know about their finances and where to put their money is, people treat money like a dirty subject. Whereas, you know, talking about the showing off and the other side of money can be, but really understanding how money works is not a dirty subject. It's a really important subject for all of us in all of our lives. And I think that's the sort of first biggest hurdle. Talk to your friends, talk to people you trust, talk to your parents' friends. More than anything, talk to people who are financially secure, somebody in your network or, you know, a friend of a friend, and ask them how they did it. You know, don't ask them for a loan. Ask them how did they get to that point. And that's what, you know, if you speak to a lot of people in that position, they say a lot more people ask them for money than ask them for advice on how they grew, how they became where they are.
Good advice from you this morning, Nikki. Thank you so much indeed for your time. Nikki joining us live from Jumeirah. First up here on the agenda this morning, going to go to more of your thoughts in just a few moments' time. In fact, we're going to speak to Steve Cronin. He's the founder of DeadSimpleSaving.com. He'll be joining us after this. Do you feel like you live within your means, or do you live beyond your means still? The Abu Dhabi Islamic Bank has released its Money Smart Index, which looked at the financial habits of some 1,300 residents earning over 10,000 dirhams a month. Top line on it found that more than half of respondents save on most months, considerably more than the 24% who reported this back in 2014. So it's pretty much doubled in the last 4 years. Let's get some more insight into this initiative and report from Adib. Let's go to the founder of DeadSimpleSaving.com. Not a financial advisor, but has a background in finance. Started his site, DeadSimpleSaving.com, to help people out, not as a business, but as great advice. Joins us live on the line. Steve Cronin is with us this morning. Good morning to you, Steve.
Good morning, Tom.
Thanks very much indeed for taking time to join us on a subject that is very close to your heart. So let's get your thoughts first and foremost on this initiative from Abu Dhabi Islamic Bank. A good initiative?
Absolutely. I think it's great that people are publishing these surveys, because there's always been a bit of a lack of unbiased, objective advice and unbiased facts about whether people are saving or not. I think Some of what they've unearthed here is not particularly surprising. If you look at what's changed since 2014, actually not a huge amount, but you see fewer catastrophes. So there was 9% of people who literally were living beyond their means, not tracking anything at all. And now we see that's gone down to 3%. I think what does concern me, though, is that when people in 2014 were saying that they were tracking, they were saving money in most months in 2014, that's actually gone down, and fewer people actually saving every single month. That's a little bit depressing. People are clearly very nervous about investing. I remember Georgia saying earlier that she just doesn't know where to put her money, and people have stopped investing in commodities, mutual funds, bonds, and really just stockpiling cash. Another alarm bell, which reiterates how important surveys like this is that debt has been climbing, and people are struggling to pay off their debt every month, and you can get into really serious difficulties if you don't pay that off.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we had some very well documented cases in the media of rogue financial advisors and funds going bust, etc. Is that what's fueling this sort of trend of people being more careful or tracking their finances, or is it more to do with rising cost of living?
I think it's the latter. People just don't have so much money splashing around. There's not so much money splashing around in the system. We're kind of in austerity mode. I think expat life in the UAE has gone through its teenage years, and people are now being a bit more serious and having to be a bit more serious about tracking their finances. But then people are struggling to know how to save. People are struggling to know how to pay off their debt. So I think it's literally that they have to track these things better, but then they don't really know what to do with it.
So imagine I'm sitting at home, I'm looking at my credit card debt of about 6,000 dirhams. I earn a certain amount each month, but it seems to be all gone by the middle of the month. What's the first step? You know, I'm lost, I don't know what to do, I'm feeling out of control. I need to sit down at my kitchen table. What's the first thing you do?
The very first thing you do is work on your mindset. So you say, I am going to be good with money. Now, so many people, they put this off. The fact that you're sitting at your kitchen table, the fact that you're arguing with your husband about money is actually a great thing, because so many people just put this off and forget about it for another day. But given that you're sitting there, believe that you can become good at money. The next thing is to start tracking your total net worth on a spreadsheet. A lot of people, again, they're terrified of Excel, terrified of numbers. These things are very, very simple, and you can get to grips with things fairly quickly. So understand what your total assets are. That means cash, investment, you might own a car, you might have some property. List those all down with their values, all the different bank accounts you have, all the different pensions you have from around the world. Put those in one column and put your liabilities in another column. So that's any credit card debt you have, any bank loans that you have, any money that you owe other people, any debt from businesses or something, put that in another column. And the difference in those two totals is your net worth. And once you track that, it's a bit like tracking your weight. Once you track it every single month, then you can start to control these things. You can start to increase your assets. You start to reduce your liabilities. And then at the same time, start tracking your income and your expenses. And again, once you track this, and it doesn't have to be like every single line item, you know, I bought some peas or something. You just literally figure out, how can I boost my income? And most importantly, how can I reduce my expenses? And you'll be amazed at the number of subscriptions you have, number of gym memberships you have. Just you can cut things out so much easily and start to increase your savings rate.
Interesting, a little point that's come through from one of our listeners this morning. Sam's been in touch with us this morning, Steve. And it sort of goes back to that point you were having there with Georgia about it's good to argue around a kitchen table about these sort of things because it starts that dialogue and discourse. Because the message come through saying, an important question to ask your listeners this morning is, are both partners in a relationship or a marriage both privy to all of their assets, be they banking, investment, stocks, or otherwise? When this is undisclosed, either due to cultural sensitivities or gender biases, financial planning, it becomes a moot point. So starting that dialogue, that discourse, is the best starting point, is it?
This is tremendously important. And I have met wives who trusted their husbands to do all the financial planning and invest in savings plans, and then 10 years later, discovered that actually their husbands are completely rubbish at investing, and they've had to start to take control, or at least equally be responsible for this. So whoever it is that is managing the finances, I would say you are individually responsible for your own personal finances and for the finances of your family, and you should take joint responsibility. You should discuss these things, and you should make sure you understand exactly what is going on with all your finances, because you may wake up one day to find that your partner's not there, or you may wake up to discover that they're actually not very good at managing this. And I think we see women in particular shy away from these things, believe that they're not good at math, they're not good with money, but actually women make fantastic long-term investors, and there's been some great studies showing that women are better at following a set of rules. And that actually helps you a lot when you're long-term investing. And unfortunately, men sometimes get shiny object syndrome and they get a bit distracted by Bitcoin, or they have a bit more knowledge about investing, and that leads them down into some treacherous path like options trading or FX trading.
So I'm going to be replaying that little bit, that sentence you just said to my husband, sort of on repeat for the next couple of weeks. Okay, so next step, say you've got a little bit of money, you've managed to sort out your savings, you're like, okay, I've got about, you know, 500 dirhams to invest each month. Then how on earth do you decide where to put it?
Right, I feel your pain, because it took me about 4 years to discover how to effectively and cheaply invest properly as an expat. The first thing you want to do is to make sure that you've got some kind of emergency cash fund. It doesn't have to be very big, let's say $1,000. Then you want to aggressively pay down any debts that you have where the interest rate is more than 5%. And you should really make that your only goal of getting that down. Any credit card balance, any high interest rate loan, you must get rid of that. Otherwise, they just grow and grow and grow, and you will never get your head above the water. Once you have that, try to set up a cash buffer of about 3 months' expenses, more or less, depending on the precariousness of your life situation and the regularity of your income. Then identify anything that you are going to need for the next 1 to 5 years. You might be putting down deposits on a property or for the kids' education, or you might have your heart set on a Lamborghini or whatever it might be. Put that aside in fairly safe term deposits or low-risk fixed income investments. But then the next step is key, to just save as much money as you possibly can every month into a retirement portfolio of you're going to put this money away for 10 to 30 years. I really don't recommend investing in a long-term savings plan or a whole life insurance plan that are aggressively touted in the UAE because of the high fees and the fact that you can't get the money out again without huge surrender penalties. And so instead, what you can do is you can take it upon yourself to learn how to invest. It's actually very simple. Every month or every quarter, invest it through an offshore broker in a diversified portfolio of stocks and bonds. For example, a relatively young person could have 80% stocks and 20% bonds. Invest in cheap, passive, index tracking, exchange-traded funds. These are called ETFs. They might as well stand for expat total freedom because they are that amazing for your retirement portfolio. So something like Vanguard VWRD, which invests in 3,000 different stocks across 27 different countries, amazingly diversified. Invest in these regularly every quarter. And then you don't have to read the financial news. You don't have to track the stock market. Just religiously invest in this every single quarter for the next 30 years, and you'll discover that you have a fantastically large savings portfolio because the fees from doing this are very, very low. Vanguard charges about 0.25%. The transaction fees are super low. And compared to a long-term savings plan where the fees could be anything up to 4%, those fees make a massive difference over the long term, and that will help you to retire or to simply step away from your corporate job and do what you've always dreamed of doing.
Hurrah. Steve, we've taken far too much of your time and free advice this morning already. If people want to find out more, Steve, best thing to do is get onto the website, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. DeadSimpleSaving.com. Everything's free on there. So just a useful source of advice, I hope.
Does what it says on the tin. Steve, bless you. Thanks so much indeed for all your thoughts this morning. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you.
George Tolley's working through a few of those tots. Well, tots? Tots.
Tots. Tots. Totting up the text. Liam in the marina says, great to hear you guys talking about savings this morning. I've been meaning to sort out my finances for ages and now I feel inspired to get started. Mohammed in Jebel Ali, I don't know how anyone can save, he says. I send all my money home for my children's education and healthcare, but I'm earning much more here, so I hope that once they finish their schooling, I can start to save.
According to a recent National Bonds Saving Index, 84% of UA sponsors admit to not saving enough for the future. 63% want to be able to save more. The intention is clear, so what's the ideal solution? We had a great text from Sam through a little earlier on. Sam's over in Dubai land. He joins us live now on the phone. We've reached out to Sam. Morning to you, Sam.
Hi, good morning, Tom.
Thanks very much indeed for being with us here this morning. And Sam, you say you make a really good moot point about discussion and getting around a table and having a conversation with your partner, with your husband, with your wife about this because of this undisclosure.
Correct. I guess it was really, I didn't get the beginning of your conversation. I have since come off listening to you as I've stopped driving, but it is a very valid point, and it's a sensitive point sometimes. You know, we've been in Dubai now for 27 odd years with from a mixed marriage with diverse cultural backgrounds. But as much as we have no issues, I'm thankful for that. We have no issues financially. I mean, I think my husband has been pretty good with, or we both have been good at some point, trying to bring this to the forefront. But over the years, I have come across various situations and been privy to conversations where, because of cultural differences, women predominantly are not engaged to or have not been privy to such conversations and such discussions. So sometimes this financial planning is hard to bring back to the table and address because then that's met with some defensiveness, if you like, which is not the idea. But then ideally it should be really, you know, across the board conversation, and that's when you get a holistic view of how to go forward with it. It's tricky. Yep.
It is tricky, and I think you've brought up a very moot point as well. We've got a number of mixed culture marriages and relationships here in the region as well, and different, as you say, cultures of saving, different cultures of approach, from the man being the provider to split opportunities. I mean, is this something that you, I don't know if you have been fully involved in, but if you had the opportunity, would you like to be more involved with the finances of the family?
Absolutely. And I've always been someone that over the years, I've always been someone who can quite honestly put my hand up and say, I don't understand, but I want to know.
Yeah.
And if someone can, or we can sit down and have that discussion, say, oh, but tell me, I've almost got too much of a curious mind for my own good sometimes, but that only comes from a place of wanting to know, that, you know, that quest for knowledge, if you like. And yes, there are times when I've let him do it, only because circumstance or career or children have taken precedence, and he has been good at it. But over time, there are things that I want to be privy of, and sometimes you almost have a, you want to know? Yeah. Yeah, I want to know. It's only because I'm curious, and I think, yeah, sometimes that's met with opposition.
It is interesting as well, because I think it's key as well, because you bring up the point, if there is an issue, or if there is an answer for a question that you're striving for, it's better to see it from two perspectives, and you might bring a completely different perspective to the table.
Correct. And once that's, not thrashed out of a hard, harsh word, but once that's discussed and you see two perspectives, then it's a win-win situation. You know, you both get clarity, and you go, it's, at the end of the day, it's for the common good, so I can only see good coming out of it. But I tell you, there are cultural issues that one has to tread. I've seen it amongst friends, among business colleagues that I've come across. It's a tricky one.
Sam, really appreciate your call this morning. Thank you so much indeed for your contribution to the show. Sam, joining us from Dubai land there. Thank you very much indeed to you. Thank you very much indeed to Martin, who's been in touch, saying what I find that many financial advisors do here particularly is take advantage of the ability for as long as it lasts to change or charge commissions. And then they put the icing on that by not disclosing the commissions and upfront charges. Thank you for that one. 4001, that was from Martin. Georgia, what are you seeing at the moment?
Well, that was a huge problem. When we came to Dubai, the first thing that we sort of seemed to meet, the first professional that seemed to come across our path was a financial advisor who told my husband that he needed to take his pension offshore and he needed to invest it in this and that and that. And we were nearly at the point of signing. And then, thank goodness, one of our friends who sort of worked in private wealth management said, look at the fee structure, look what you're signing away. And we discovered that the fees would have easily discounted any potential profit. And there's this sort of bamboozling that you're offshore and therefore, you know, it's sort of exciting and you're not going to have to pay tax. And then there's this desire to sort of sign up as quickly as possible because you're offshore and you don't have to pay tax. And then actually what emerges is that you've signed a document that enables people to take whatever fees they like for as long as they like, and therefore completely discount any potential benefits that you might get for not having to pay tax on your interest.
Talk to us about your finances. Do you feel that you are in a good place at the place at the moment? Do you feel that you're in a better place than you were 4 years ago? That certainly seems to be the suggestion from this recent research from ADIB, suggesting there have been major changes in the way we approach our finances and our saving in just the last 4 years. Does that ring true in your household? Does that ring true with your bank balance at the moment and your financial security? Please do reach out to the show. This is your morning phone-in on Dubai Eye 103.8 from Gordon. He's been in touch with the show this morning. Gordon, thank you to you for your comments. And don't forget, the product provider who is aware that the expectations being set will never be met. Gordon, good man, bless you. Thanks for that one. 4001 if you want to get involved in the conversation. Look, George and I can't have a conversation like this about all things finance without mentoring Mr. Buffet, can we?
The Warren. I love that you're saying Mr. Buffet, like he's Mrs. Bouquet.
I wouldn't possibly say it to his face, but it's just because the power of being 4,000 miles away, we can get
and
away with it.
And an 84 billionaire. Do you know what's fascinating about him is that you'd think that he'd be investing in all sorts of things that you'd never heard of, but he invests in big brands like Gillette, Coca-Cola. He just puts money in Apple, huge amounts of money in Apple, even though everyone says that Apple's a bust flush. He's like, no, I'm piling in.
Let's hear from him now, because billionaire investor Warren Buffett, how did he get started? He explains, you don't need to start with much to benefit from compound interest.
Probably when I was seven or so, I took this book out of the Benson Library called 1,000 Ways to Make $1,000. And one of the ways in this book was having penny weighing machines. And I sat and calculated how much it would cost to buy the first weighing machine and then how long it would take for the profit for that one to buy another one. And I would sit there and create these compound interest tables to figure out how long it would take me to have a weighing machine for every person in the world. I had everybody in the country weighing themselves 10 times a day and me just sitting there like John D. Rockefeller's weighing machines. The allowance when I was a little boy was a nickel a week, but I liked the idea of having a little more than a nickel a week to work with, and I went into business very early. I started selling Coca-Cola door-to-door. I sold gum door-to-door. I sold Saturday Evening Post, Liberty Magazine, Ladies' Home Journal, you name it. I think I enjoyed the game almost right from the start. But I like being my own boss. That's one thing I liked about delivering papers. I was delivering 500 papers a day, and I made a penny a paper, but in terms of compounding, that penny turned into something else. Einstein is reputed to have said that compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world or something like that, and it goes back to that story you probably learned when you were in grade school where somebody did something for the king, and the king said, "What can I do for you?" And he said, "Well, let's take a chessboard and put one kernel of wheat on the first square and then double it on the second and double it on the third." And the king readily agreed to it, and by the time he figured out what 2 to the 64th amounted to, he was giving away the entire kingdom. So it's a pretty simple concept, but over time, it accomplishes extraordinary things.
The voice of Warren Buffett there giving his thoughts on what it takes to become a billionaire. I think most of us are a little bit off the... Interesting you mentioned there about him investing in big brands as well, because we just had the release of the top 10 most valuable global brands overnight. This was coming out from the latest research. Technology stocks are soaring, not just in the stock markets, even their brand values are as well. So it's the top 10 most valuable global brands. I get it. It's interesting. You know, top 10, you got all the big guns in there and things like that. Google's number one, Apple's number two, Amazon number three. There is one brand in the top 10 that I've never heard of. Now, either that is because I have my head in the sand, or I'm showing my ignorance, I'm assuming,
or
towards
age.
Technology or finance, I'm not sure. But Goob goes, so top five is Google, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, and then number five, Tencent.
No idea. I'm going to have to look it up.
I've not heard of Tencent.
Tencent.
Then you've got Facebook, Visa, McDonald's, Alibaba, and AT&T, very recognisable. But Tencent, I've never heard of.
It's Chinese. So founded in November 1998, Tencent is a leading provider of internet value-added services in China. I think that's a posh way of saying it. It's an internet provider. Fascinating.
I know. It's amazing that they make it into the top 10, isn't it?
That's amazing.
As a global brand. So that's the, according to the Brand Z, top 100 most valuable global brands rankings put out by the advertising behemoth WPP and research consultancy Kantar Millwood
Brown.
Wow.
They've got Alibaba in there as well. I've heard of Alibaba. They're that big, a shopping company, but
Amazon
they sell in bulk.
Equivalent over in China, isn't it?
Yeah, but like in bulk as well. Yeah. Like, I mean, a fascinating, amazing list. But you know, that's the funny thing. So my husband and I started thinking, okay, so why don't we do what Warren Buffett does? And this is a genuine conversation we've had sitting around the kitchen table. We're like, well, okay, so he says invest in big brands. Well, we think, you know, so-and-so is going to do well. I think KFC is going to do quite well. Personally, when we went to China about 10 years ago, loads of the restaurants there were KFC. They seem to be doing better than McDonald's. And I'm like, okay, so let's do it. Let's put, I don't know, 6,000 dirham in this company and 6,000 dirham in the other. And we don't know how to do it. How do you do that? There's such a hurdle, you know, and this is my husband's used to work as an investment banker, and still we find it difficult. And one of the great things that we've been reading this book by Andrew Hallam, which is a great book. I find it quite hard to understand, but my husband's a bit better at it. And he talks about all the various things you can do. And one of the big points that he makes is you look at the bankers and you see their watches and you see their fancy cars and you see their yachts and you start to think, well, where are all their rich clients? And you suddenly realize that actually the people who manage your money are the people who are actually getting rich on it. And then you start to get wrapped in knots about fees. And then you, back to the beginning, what do you do?
Andrew, thanks very much indeed for your text message this morning saying, hi guys, it's fantastic that you are running discussions on the challenges of investing and predatory nature of advisors here, but he says you also need to shine a little more attention on the advertising of such products here in the region. I think it's a very moot point as well that we can point the finger at individuals and road cases and things like that, but a lot of these big finance houses who offer products in line with this are able to sort of advertise them, and the beauty of advertising and marketing is they become alluring.
I mean, one of the things that's very difficult is this idea of regulation. So obviously if you put your money in a country where there's tax, they're like the UK or the US, then you're going to lose some of your profit each month, but they are very well regulated regions. And so there is this balance between risk and reward. And it is so hard to know where you put yourself.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.